Hey, did you know that you can sign up for a free live interactive session with Jack Weston? These are trial sessions where you can get an amazing introduction to the car section and the MCAT as a whole. You'll break down a passage the way that Jack Weston wants you to break it down, and it'll blow you away at how simple the test can be. You can go sign up at jackweston.com. These trial sessions are offered every week. The MCAT Cars Podcast, session number 102. The car section of the MCAT gives thousands of pre-meds nightmares every night. Whether you're an ESL student, lack confidence while reading, or a slow reader like me, Jack Weston and the medical school headquarters are here to help you score higher in every section so you can be confident you're ready to get the MCAT score of your dreams. Now, welcome to the MCAT Cars Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, and I'm excited that you are here to join me today on this special episode of the MCAT Cars Podcast with Jack Weston. Why is it special? Because you're here. And that's why it is special. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this today. We get so many emails, so many comments from students about these free resources. Imagine if you were to spend more one-on-one time with Jack, what that could do for you. Go to jackweston.com and check out his MCAT Cars Strategy course right now. That's jackweston.com. We're going to go ahead and jump into today's passage with Jack from jackweston.com. Jack Weston back for some more MCAT Cars Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I am excited to jump in and see what kind of fun stuff we have to torture myself with today.
No, I think you're going to have fun with this one.
Let's hope so. If you are listening to this and you want to read this article that we're going to break down, just you can go to mcatcarspodcast.com/102 or swipe or tap on the artwork if you're listening on your phone or iPad or whatever device that you're listening to this on. And we'll have a link and everything there that you need. So let's go and jump in to our article right now. So the first paragraph, you're walking along a forest trail. All right. So you are walking along a forest trail. So the author here trying to get me to picture something going on. So I'm on a forest trail, which is easy because I literally a week ago was walking on a forest trail. So I'm picturing myself there again. All right. You've been walking for a while now and your bladder is full. All right, so now I have to urinate. thanks, author, for telling me this. Okay, this is fun. It's been a long while since you've passed another person, but as a precaution, you take a few strides off the path before dropping your pants. All right, so now I'm going to go pee in a bush somewhere.
I think we've all had this issue at one point.
Been there, done that. When you're done, you look up and scan your surroundings. All right, so just making sure that you're free. Nobody saw. We're good. Your eye catches on something. Uh-oh, what happened? It would be easy to miss. A small rectangular box disguised crudely in camo print, attached to a tree trunk with a strap. Uh-oh, somebody put a Ring doorbell out there. It blinks at you with its single eye. All right, so we're in a forest. We need to pee. We go pee because we're in a forest. There's nobody around. And then all of a sudden, you see a camera strapped to a tree.
Wow, very good imagery here.
Yeah, I like it.
Exactly.
All right. All right, can we pause so I can go pee? Because it may... No, just kidding. okay, interesting. Next paragraph. We know that surveillance is ubiquitous in cities, but most of us rarely think about the fact that networks of surveillance extend even into forests and marshes, deserts and oceans. All right, so the author here is saying that most people will understand, right? In cities, we have cameras and there's really no privacy anywhere. But we don't think about how in these rural, secluded areas, we also may be surveilled.
Right, and that's the point the author is trying to make here. Great. And I love how you visualize this. I mean, we talked about visualization last week. Mm. Right. And making sure you visualize it the way the author wants you to. Mm-hmm. And I think you did that, right? Yeah. You didn't bring in any outside perspective or points of views or bias. You just saw it the way it's supposed to be seen. Mm. Okay.
We tend to think of technological infrastructure as ending where the visible built environment does, which is not an unfounded assumption, especially in national parks and nature reserves, which actively market themselves as places to, quote, shut or switch off. So again, the author here giving us some more kind of ammo as to why we don't think we can be surveilled in these remote areas is we tend to think of these places as where we can switch off, where there's, quote, no technology. So that's interesting. When our phone ceases to pick up a signal, it corroborates the impression we finally found ourselves in a place where technology has no power over us. Okay, so again, just more of that personal bias of, well, our phone doesn't have a signal, therefore there's no technology here.
Yeah. Okay.
The reality, however, is that often these places are thrumming with devices, some more visible than others, quietly monitoring soundscapes, air quality, humidity, temperature, soil, acidity, the presence and absence of different species of people. All right, so the author here basically saying that our assumptions are wrong, that these places do have lots of devices or potentially can have lots of devices doing all of these different things.
Right, even if there is really no signal out there.
All right. Interesting. Next paragraph. Monitoring via GIS, passive or automated sampling, video and audio recording, or biomonitoring is a vital part of ecological research, enabling researchers to track the degradation and regeneration of ecosystems, document extreme weather events, identify rapid drops or increases in animal or plant species, and determine ecosystem health. All right, so the author here giving us examples of why we have all of this technology out in the wilderness.
Right, and it's interesting. Like, the author is not claiming that we have all this technology to kind of surveil us,
yep.
Right? But it's just out there.
Yeah.
So you may, you know, I could so see a student read this and go, oh, look, they're trying to spy on us, right? Because that's what we've been talking about with privacy for the past couple of years, right?
Yep.
With social media taking over our data. No, this is just happenstance that you are there, right? That you are being surveyed, right? So it's not necessarily for you. It's just you're in the crossfire.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point. I definitely think people will misread that. Or add in their own assumption of what that means. So that's good.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is tempting to think that this might constitute a form of, quote, good surveillance. So again, but this potential other assumption, right? This other assumption, like, oh, that's good. We're trying to make sure our ecosystem is healthy. And so that must be, quote, good. But the author's not necessarily reading into that either. But the militaristic colonial history this surveillance belongs to is not simply waived by the fact that it operates in a forest. All right, so picking up on author tone here, the author here setting up that we might think this is good, but the militaristic, which I think the author here is potentially saying is bad, colonial
right.
history, which we know is kind of bad,
right.
that we have this surveillance belonging to this history, doesn't all of a sudden make surveillance good just because it's operating in a forest.
Right. So, you know, you pointed out something. Militaristic is obviously bad in this case,
mm-hmm.
but that's not always bad. And you even said, look, most people would say colonial is bad. Maybe it's not bad for at least the author. We cannot bring in our judgments and transfer them to the author. It's not acceptable. But in this case, we don't have to transfer. The author is helping us, is aiding us in giving us their tone, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you may think that colonialism is bad, and it probably is. But we cannot put words into the author's mouth. Thankfully, we don't have to do that because the author is obviously transitioning to talking about this in a negative context, which now we can assume military and colonization is bad.
Yeah. And it's one of those, I think it's one of those subtle words here, right? We see a lot of these bigger words that stand out, like however, or I can't think of any off the top of my head, but this small word at the beginning of the sentence, but, right? It's tempting to think this is good, but. And right. So we get a little tone from that, I think.
There you go. Yeah. And it's tempting to think that this might be a good.
Yep.
So that alone
yep.
tells you that it's not actually good.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
All right. I like it. Even inadvertently, many of the tools we use to do environmental science end up reproducing these systems. All right. So again, going back to the author's point of view on this militaristic and colonial systems, it sounds like the author is saying that these systems are bad and that this technology, even if we're trying to do good things with it, may reproduce these negative systems as well.
Yeah, these negative military, colonial kind of systems, whatever it is, can't be overlooked, right? At least that's what the author is trying to say. The author is saying we should be skeptical.
Mm.
We should be worried, mm-hmm. right? The author is injecting this kind of tone into the passage, the cautious.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting. I read this and I'm thinking about it, and I go back to a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about these cultural kind of biases that end up in our science and research. This is almost the same thing, right? We have this research going on potentially, but we still are human and still have biases and go, well, how else can we use this stuff for our own good, for our country's own good or whatever. So that's interesting how there's a
right.
potential similarity there.
Yeah, interesting.
All right, next paragraph. The rise of surveillance technologies in conservation science corresponds with a turn towards methods that are, quote, non-invasive, allowing research to happen at a distance from its subject and therefore resulting in minimal disturbance. All right, so just pointing out that these surveillance technologies allow us to not disturb things, allow us to kind of be far away from what we're studying.
Okay,
I've heard a really good podcast episode on one of these where they set up microphones in a forest and they have some algorithms that they run the sounds through to track how many of a specific species of it was like a hippo or elephant or something going through there, and they can hear gunshots for poachers, and it's really cool how they're doing this stuff.
So they can figure out how many hippos there are based on sound alone.
Yeah. Just based on the sound. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was elephants, but yeah, this is really, really interesting. I think it was a Freakonomics episode, if I remember correctly. But all right, next sentence. One of the most effective and therefore common monitoring devices found in nature is the camera trap, and also known as a trail camera. So again, going back to coming full circle to us getting caught with our pants down. Widely used in ecology to monitor the population size, distribution, and behavior of different species of animals, camera traps are cameras that are activated by a motion or infrared sensor, tripwires, pull wires, pressure plates, lasers, or microwave sensors. So just kind of defining what these camera traps are and how they work.
Yeah. Okay.
Trying to think how students can get tripped here, tripwires get tripped here as they go, okay, I need to memorize all of these different ways these cameras work. I'm like, I don't think it's that important. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, it's not important at all. They're never going to test you on that.
Yeah.
They're going to test you on the bigger picture
mm-hmm.
that ultimately you can use this surveillance in more than one way,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, are they actually doing that? That's another question. We don't know. But the author is definitely pointing that this is really, really sophisticated stuff. And it's not just in the urban environment, right? It's also in these forests and different natural places. So that's, I think, the bigger point that they're going to test you on. Not how are they actually monitoring. That's great to know, but they'll never ask you about that.
Yeah. They can be left alone for weeks or months on end to capture images of wildlife. All right. So just again, more details on how these cameras work and how you can just leave them alone, which leads to that minimal disturbance of the environment. Inconspicuous in appearance and housed in weatherproof casing, they enable researchers to observe rare events in a, quote, non-invasive manner and without the physical and mental strain of waiting and watching. Oh, imagine way back in the day, you're like an intern. You're like, okay, intern, go hang out in the woods for 4 months and hopefully the right animal will cross your path once. Now we have technology to torture interns in a different way. Okay, so again, just this last sentence is really just talking about the technology specifically with these cameras and how they're good potentially for observing nature.
Yeah, and this reminds me of those documentaries with the guy with the British voice who just narrates these stories about animals.
Yeah.
Right. Using, you know, I don't know what they're called, but it's on Netflix and everywhere, really.
I think it's just called YouTube. Earth.
Earth, yeah, whatever it is. You know, and it just,
those are so good.
It blows my mind at how amazing the cameras and everything they capture it really is. And I love how that guy, you know, narrates it into a story. Right? I love that.
All right. So this one, again, relatively straightforward. I think I understood a lot. Again, I think there's lots of traps for students to fall into. So hopefully we get some easy questions from this one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it seems like an easy read, but they could test you on the more minute kind of details, not in terms of what kind of camera they're using or how they're setting it up, but more about tone and how the author perceives this idea and what are the more bigger ideas of the passage that you may overlook, right? So yeah, I think the main idea of this passage would definitely be that this kind of surveillance technology exists throughout nature, right? And ultimately, there is potential for it to be problematic. I mean, even in the last paragraph, the author is quoted saying non-invasive. The reason why it's quoted is because maybe it is evasive. Maybe it actually does interfere to some extent.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the whole point of you know, kind of peeing in the bush and it actually does kind of bother you, right? It actually does sort of get in your way. But yeah, I think the bigger point is that it's everywhere.
All right. There you have it. As I told you, our special episode, because you are here. If this was your first time here, thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. It's free. You get them every week to your device, or you can listen to them online or even on YouTube. We have a special MedEd Media channel that has all of our audio podcasts on YouTube. Again, don't forget to go check out jackweston.com. If this free podcast can help so many of you, just imagine what some more one-on-one time with Jack could help with. jackweston.com. Go check out the MCAT Cars Strategy course. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT Cars Podcast.
This is MedEd Media.